just go back and do the first couple lines from yesterday. We're in the Gemara Sanhedrin, Lamed Amud Beis, six lines from the bottom. We're now going back to the discussion of two witnesses that give certain aspects of contradictory descriptions of an event. So Amar Rabbi Yehuda, just quickly we went over yesterday at the end. Rabbi Yehuda said, Eidus hamachacheshes zu esu bebedikos, testimony in which the contradiction of the witnesses is in the supplementary questions, not the primary questions, but the supplementary questions. Kshera, it is accept, it's valid. Bidine mominus, in monetary cases. Okay? Only in monetary, it seems to say only, it says monetary as opposed to capital cases. That is the statement of who? Rabbi Yehuda. Amar Rava, Rava says that Mistavra Milsad Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda's statement is reasonable, for example, in a case. Be'echad Omer Ba'arniki Shchora. One says that the money was loaned in a black purse. Ve'echad Omer Ba'arniki Levona. One says it was loaned in a white purse. That is that's a peripheral issue. It's not a main issue, so it doesn't knock off the validity of the two witnesses. Aval, but echad omer mona shochar. But one says the money was black, meaning the coins were old. Vechad omer mona love, and one says the coins were white, new coins. Ain't been starving. They would not be combined because that is a contradiction of a central point of the testimony. And then that's not good. However, well, so that's what, who said all that? Rabbi Yehuda said, Rava said in saying this is probably what Rabbi Yehuda meant. Now the Gemara is going to ask a question on this statement based on the implication. Because we've been talking about Dine Mominos. The implication is, well, what about Dine Nefashos? In cases of capital cases, we would say the implication is the opposite. Which, to which the Gemara is going to ask, "Va'arnaki shchora b'dinei nefashos lo?" Are you going to say a black purse as opposed to a white purse is not accepted in capital cases? Okay, is that what you're implying? Now, I guess they ask, "Well, did you see the murder victim? Let's say it was a what do you call it? A theft and a murder." There was a mugging and then he killed him. So what did you see? Well, I saw the guy. Well, he asked for his money. He said no. And then what did he do? He went and they were fighting over taking the purse. And then he shot him. Okay, what color was the purse? Okay, one says white, one says black. Mm-hmm. So you said before, Rava said, by monetary cases, mm-hmm. black and white purse, it doesn't make a difference. Implication by capital cases, the supplementary questions would make a difference. That's what you're going to say? Well, there's a problem. Because Amar Rav Chista says, Echad Omer B'Sayah Fargo, if one guy says the guy killed him with a sword, Echad Omer B'Aririd, and one said he killed him with a dagger, Hargo, Ein Ze Nochon, then this is not proper testimony. Okay, because obviously, if you don't even know what he killed him with, that's a major problem. If they can't agree on what he killed him with, then what did you exactly see? But, Echad Omer Kalev Shchorim, but one of them said, I saw that the murderer's clothes were black. Echad Omer Kevin Levadim, one says that his clothing was white. Hareza Nochon, that is a proper testimony. What do you see from there? Peripheral testimony is not important in a capital case. So how could Rabbi Yehuda explain Rava? That Rava speaking about, you know, supplementary cases over there, and we're saying that that implies that only by monetary cases does the supplementary differences not make a difference, but in capital cases it does. We see Rav Chista says it doesn't make a difference to peripheral evidence. So it's a question for Rav Chista. As you go to the top of the next page, the answer is very obvious. And what's the answer? Gavra, Karamis, do you mean to contrast the view of one person with another? Rav Yehuda says it's not a problem, and so why do I care, Rav Chisda? They're two different rabbis. It's not a mission. Not bring a proof from a mission or a brisa. So what does it matter? So therefore, don't ask me a question from another person. So that's not a question. To which now we bring a statement from the Nahardois. We brought them yesterday. Another one says that there'll be valid cases by monetary differences. Nahardoi Amri, the Nahardoi says, Afilu Echad Omer Mona Shochar, even if one says it's a black mona, Echad Omer Mona Lovin, a white mona, Mitzarfin, they will still be combined, not like the other rabbi who said the differences between the black and the white money. Come on, who are they like? They are like Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha. They're like Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha. Remember, going back to yesterday's Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha. Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha said about two witnesses about the guy admitted he owed $100. He said, even if what one witness says he admitted on Sunday, and the other one says on Monday, right? And he went even further. Even if the guy says, I saw him borrow the money from him on Sunday. And the other guy says, I saw him borrow the money on Monday, which is mamish two separate events. Still, we combine the testimonies. So if you're going to combine those kinds of testimonies, where clearly it was two separate events, but still, they both say he owes him $100.
Yeah.
Well, now, if one guy says, I saw him borrow the money, was new money. One guy says, old money. That's for sure is going to be okay. Uh-huh. Let's say they're saying the same day, right? That's much more peripheral. So that's where it will be like Rabbi Shua ben Korcha. So that's what the Nahardois say. The Gemara assumes that the Nahardois are like Rabbi Shua ben Korcha. To which Gemara is going to ask a question. Maybe not. Amar the Shamal Rabbi Shua ben Korcha. Maybe now. Maybe Rabbi Shua ben Korcha would disagree. Maybe when do we hear Rabbi Shua ben Korcha issue is ruling where there is no contradiction to each other, but it's concerning different loans. They're not contradicting themselves. One guy said, I saw him borrow the money on Sunday. One guy said, I saw him borrow the money on Monday. Well, the truth is he could have borrowed the money Sunday and Monday. The witnesses are not contradicting themselves, are they? They're just saying he owes 100. Could be he owes 200. But each one's agreeing to 100. But here, when one says it's new money, one guy says it's old money on the same event. But hecha de machashi hadadi, but where they are self-contradicting, because in the one testimony, one says it's black and one says it's white. Miyamar, how do you know Rabbi Shua ben Korcha would apply his rule? Look at the footnote. Rabbi Shua ben Korcha's ruling applies only to a case where the witnesses testify two different loans that took place at different times, with only one witness present each occasion. Since neither witness contradicts the testimony of the other, we have two witnesses attesting the fact that the debtor owes the creditor a mona. Here, however, the witnesses agree that only a single transaction took place, yet they contradict each other regarding whether it was a black mona or a white one that was loaned. Shua ben Korcha's ruling provides no basis for combining their testimonies in such a case. In other words, how do we know if Shua ben Korcha would agree to that kind of case? All the cases where Shua ben Korcha said you would combine the two witnesses is where there's neither one has contradicted a drop of what the other one said. But maybe not. But maybe if it is, it's a problem. Okay, so maybe you're right. So maybe this statement of who's this last rabbi over here, to say the Gemara is saying that the Nahardois, who are they like? Maybe they're not like Rabbi Shua ben Korcha. So let's say that the Nahardois are like the following person. Ella rather say the Nahardois view, Huda Omar, Kihai Tani holds like the following Tana. The Tani we learn in a brisa the following. Okay, again, the same issue. Let's take a note in the footnote here. The Mishnah in Nazir records a dispute between Bisham and Yisul regarding the acceptability of testimonies which are contradictory in regard to certain details of the story. It's Machlokes Bisul Bisham in this. According to that Mishnah, the dispute centers on a contradiction between two sets of witnesses. Not two witnesses, one and one, but two and two. Right? Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar, however, has a different version of that dispute, which he sets forth in the following brisa. Okay? I'm going to see now. In the Mishnah, it seems, the argument was two sets, one set against another one. Shua ben Elazar, Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar is going to learn. We'll see. I understand. But he's going to modify this. We're going to see. Amar Reb Shimon Elazar. Reb Shimon Elazar says the following regarding Machlokas Beisil Beishamai. Lo Nechlu Beisham Beisil. Beisham Beisil, they only argue. When do they argue? Yes. Al Shtei Kitin. When it's two sets, again, one set against another. That's when they do argue. She'achas Omeris. One says, Masayim. Let's say one group says, the guy loaned him 200. Fa'achas Omeris. One says, he loaned him 100. That's when there is a machlokes. Why? Because the machlokes is shiyesh bichlal mosaim mana. Because included in 200 is 100. So it's possible to say that there's compatibility. In other words, the testimony that 200 zuz were lent is not considered contradictory to the testimony that a mana was lent, for a mana is included in 200 zuz. Thus, both sets of witnesses agree that there was a loan of at least a mana. They disagree only as to whether a second mana was loaned. We therefore accept the testimony regarding a mana and reject the testimony regarding the second mana. So he's saying like this. They're arguing in that case, but they're not arguing in this kind of a case.
Okay.
In a case where it's one says 200 and one says 100.
A loan was made, that's for sure.
Right? So they both agree that you got to pay 100.
Yeah.
That they agree, right?
Yeah.
So what do they agree about? Good. What do they agree about? In regard to what did Beis Shammai Sil disagree? In other words, he's learning the machlokas differently. Originally, from the Mishnah, it looks like they argued by two sets. He says, no, they don't argue by two sets, because they agree that within 200 is 100, and you for sure have to pay 100. So when do Beis Sil and Beis Shammai argue? Akas achas, when it's in one group itself, one witness and another witness. One of them says the loan was 100, and one of them says it was 200. So it's not two sets, one set against one set. It was one on one.
What's the difference? Well, still a loan was made.
I understand, but you don't have two witnesses saying the same thing, as we'll see. Shebei Shammai, Oimrim Bei Shammai holds Nechluch Vaidusim. He says their testimony is divided, and it's invalid even with the respect to the mana. Beis Shammai hold that when there's a contradiction between two witnesses amongst themselves concerning the amount of the loan, must assume that one of the witnesses is lying. One who willingly bears false testimony loses eligibility to act as a witness. Thus, there are no longer two credible witnesses of the loan and cannot be collected. This is unlike a contradiction to two sets of witnesses, in which case, regardless of which set is lying, there's still one complete testimony. See the difference? If Beis Shammai says, well, one says, two say 100, two say 200. So guess what? One for sure is lying. Great. One's for sure lying, but one's for sure not lying.
Which one is right?
Doesn't matter, but at least you pay 100. At least you pay 100. So you pay the lesser. Pay 100. But if it's one and one together, well, one has to be lying, then only one's there. One's not enough to collect. That's what Beis Shammai holds. Beis Hillel, no, Beis Hillel says, Yesh Bichlal, Masai Mana. There is included in 200 is 100. And now, according to Reb Shimon Elazar, Beis Hillel accept the common aspect of the testimonies of two individual witnesses, even where they do not agree entirely. And that's who the Nahardois will hold like. Back to those Nahardois. Even if one says the money is new money and old money, that's no different than 200 and 100, right? Beis Hillel do not assume that one of the witnesses is necessarily dishonest. Rather, they view the discrepancy as an inaccuracy on the part of one of the witnesses, leaving his credibility as a witness intact. We never accept the lesser of their testimony, since both are in agreement with respect to the lesser amount. The Nahardois apply the opinion of Beis Hillel as delineated by Reb Shimon Elazar to the case of a black mana and a white mana. They therefore, one's worth more, one's worth less. New money versus old money, right? New money's worth more. They therefore obligate the debtor to pay the value of a black mana, which is somewhat less than that of a white mana, since both witnesses agree that he owes at least that amount. Again, so now do I say that when there's a difference, and one says, I saw him borrow white money, one says, I own black money, they say, we still accept their testimony? Because the Nardois hold like the way Rabbi Lazar, Shimon Lazar explains Beis Hillel, with 200 and 100, that you'd at least pay 100. So the same level here, you'd at least pay for the black money. Correct. Next case of a little bit of discrepancy in testimony. One guy says he borrowed from him a barrel of wine. Ve'echad omer chavi shel shem. Once they borrowed him a barrel of oil. Okay. So what's the case? What? Right?
The barrel is there, but what's in it?
Yeah.
Assumed it was oil.
So hava uvda, there was such a story. Vasal kavda Ravami. They came to Ravami for him to render the law. So chayve Ravami lishlume lechavita dechamer. Ravami obligated the borrower to pay him back at least a barrel of wine. We'll see that wine is cheaper than oil. Migo chavita de mishcha, from within the value of a barrel of oil. I'm sorry. Yeah. The barrel of wine is worth less than the oil. Thus, if he owed him a barrel of oil, he certainly owed him the value of a barrel of wine. In other words, if he owed him oil, he for sure owed him wine. Again, you see that? It's the same thing as the 200 and the 100. Come on, who does he hold like? Who did Rabbami hold like? Obviously, Rav Shimon ben Elazar. Like Rav Shimon ben Elazar. We just explained to Beis Hillel the same thing. The same thing. To which Gemara says, no, maybe he doesn't hold like Rav Shimon ben Elazar. Maybe Rav Shimon ben Elazar didn't go that far. Amar d'amar Rav Shimon ben Elazar. Maybe Rav Shimon ben Elazar said regarding his ruling, Hechadesh Bechlal Masai Mana, when we say that within 200 is 100. 200 has 100. But you can't say that oil has wine. It might be a value of it, but it's not the same thing, right? $100 bills has $200, $1 bills has 100 $1 bills, but oil does not have wine in it. So
converted to monetary value.
But he didn't. But that's going to be the answer. But in the question, you can't. Was it oil? Was it wine? Money is money, but oil is not wine, and wine is not oil. Maybe ki hai gavna, but in this case, miyamar, when it's wine and oil, who says? The case is different than the preceding case is a black mana and a white mana, where the notarius ruled that the lesser of the testament was accepted. In the preceding case, both witnesses agreed to the basic fact that their loan involved a mana. There was many questions to the quality of the mana. However, where there's a contradiction in regard to what item was lent, the testimonies are not compatible. So we have to say, no, we're not talking exactly where the witnesses says it was a barrel of oil or a barrel of wine, but rather it was this. Lo tricha, no. It still fits Rav Shimon ben Elazar's view because this was the case. It was lidmei. We're talking of the value of barrels of wine and oil, not actual barrels. In other words, one witness stated the debtor admitted to owing payment for a barrel of wine, while the other witness claimed that he had admitted to owing payment of a barrel of oil. It wasn't they saw the loan of a barrel of oil and a barrel of wine. They saw the debtor say, I owe you the value of a barrel of oil. I have to pay you cash. One says, I owe you the value of a barrel of wine. I have to pay you cash. One says more cash. One says less cash. And that's what he's saying. So therefore, he would say that case would be like Rav Shimon ben Elazar's explanation of Beis Hillel. Next case. Echad Omer Bijuta El Yonah. One says that the guy lent him the money in the upper story of a house. Now it's the question of where. Ve'echad Omer Bijuta Tachton. One says he lent him the money, same amount of money, but in the lower story. So they both agree he borrowed 100. Question is where, and it's in the same house, just upper story, lower story. Rab Chanina said, Masa, there was such a story, Bolafanei Rebbe came before Rebbe, Vitziruf Edusam, and he combined their testimony. Why? Because the point of contradiction was in a non-essential aspect of their testimony. This holds true even according to Yehuda, who disqualifies the testimony of witnesses who contradict each other as to whether the loan consists of a white mana or a black mana, but a minute difference as to the location of the loan is universally considered a non-essential point. Now, however, look at the commentaries of the Yad Ramah and the Muki Yosef, who said that a wide discrepancy regarding the location would constitute a contradiction with regard to one of the seven standard questions, because now you couldn't refute them as an eid zomeh. In other words, here the difference, even in place, is mild. It's just upstairs and downstairs. I mean, it's same address. So remember he said there's the seven primary questions, and one of them is where did the event take place? Yeah. Now, if they don't agree to where the event takes place, we can't, remember, he has to know because we have to be able to zomify these guys. The guy says it happened in this place. Well, you have to leave him open that if he's lying, someone can say, how can you say that? You were in another place at the time. But that wouldn't apply to upstairs and downstairs. You can't say, well, you were upstairs at the time you said it was downstairs. Well, it only takes about 3 seconds to go from upstairs and downstairs. So that would not, that's considered the same location. But if indeed they would say, I saw him lend the money in a place, and the other guy says a place that's 50 miles away, then we would not accept the testimony because that becomes a critical distinction between the two. Okay, one more little piece of Gemara, and then we hit the Mishnah. We're almost finished with this parak. Now we go to the back to the Mishnah, explaining on the Mishnah. The Mishnah asks, and from where do we know that when a judge leaves the courtroom, he shouldn't give the opinions of the other jurists? We already discussed what do they announce in front of the court. This is a separate issue. Now the court's over. Case closed. Everyone's going home. Now the litigant goes over to the judge. So tell me, how did you vote? Why did you vote against me? Now he can't say, it wasn't me. It was the other guys. Right. Now, before we were discussing last week, when the court makes the decision, how do they say the decision? Remember?
Yeah.
If it was a 2-1, was this, what's the wording? So now we're just taking it one step down. Once the court session is over, now an individual judge himself may not divulge anyone's opinions. So now the Gemara wants to know, the Mishnah says, and where do you know, from where do you know that he's not allowed to state the opinions? So now, Tana Rabbanan, we have a Braisa. It expands upon, says on the Mishnah. How do we know that when the judge leaves the court, he should not say the following to the losing party? Haredi Mizake, I was the one who was on your side. It was my friends who said you were liable. How do you, from where do you know you're not allowed to do that? Oh, we're not finished. Avol Mamas, what can I do? Shechaveri Rabbah, but my friends were more than me. There were two against me. It was one, so don't blame me. How do you know how to say that? Talmud Loimar, the Torah says, Lo Selech Rochil Ba'amecha, you may not walk around as a gossip mongerer, last week's Parsha. Yeah. And also another proof, Yomer, it says in Proverbs, Holech Rochil, a person who is a gossip mongerer, what's the type of stuff he does? Megalasol, he reveals secret. Interesting. The Bryce is an exact quotation of our Mishnah. Mm-hmm. It's therefore unclear why the Gemara cites it. It would appear from this that the correct version of the Mishnah does not include both verses. Indeed, there are differing versions of the Mishnah in which the verse of one of the others is deleted. In other words, it's the exact same thing our Mishnah said. So why is the Gemara bringing it? The answer is, must be our Gemara had a different version of the Mishnah, where the Mishnah brought one of the two Pesukim and the Bryce brought both. Okay, fine.
It says reveal secrets.
Yeah.
How do you know what the secret?
When three judges render an opinion, that's for sure a secret. That's for sure a secret. No way that's not a secret. So that this is very important. When a person tells you something confidentially, and you go tell others, that is real rechilus. That's a sin to do that. People say, well, you know how it is. I only told my wife. That's the story with, that's the Lag BaOmer story. Right? That's what we're going to give the Parsha class on today. The Lag BaOmer story with Rab Shimon Bar Yochai, Rab Yossi, and I think Rab Yehuda. I think so. Or Yehuda, not Rab Yehuda. Those three, they were talking amongst each other privately. One said, oh, the Romans are so nice. They build bridges. They build this. They build bathhouses, this and that. It's a private conversation, three of them. Rav Shimon would say, what are you talking about? They're the worst people in the world. They only do it to tax us and to this and to that and to that. He spoke negatively. On the other, the third guy went out and started telling people. And it got to the Roman government. And that's where Rav Shimon Bar Yochai had to hide in a cave. That is gossip mongering, because that was a secret that was not supposed to be told. So that's a clear example of that. Okay, a related story. Hahu Talmida, there was a student, the Nafik Allah Kala. There was a rumor emerged about him. All right? There was a rumor about a certain student. And what was it? The Gole Milsa de Idmar Bay Madresha. He revealed a secret matter that had been spoken in the yeshiva. How long ago was this matter told him? How long ago did he hear the secret that he revealed it today? Basar Esim Retati Shav, after 22 years. Guy told him a secret 22 years ago, and now he said it to somebody else. Well, when they found out about that, Afke Ravami, Ibid Rashi. Ravami heard about it, he kicked him out of yeshiva. Amar Dane Gali Razia. This person reveals secret. Now, apparently the rumored information should be confirmed. This incident illustrates that it is forbidden to disclose private information even as known to a large group of people, such as the members of a study hall. This is derived from the Mishnah's case, in which the judge's opinions are known to each other, and may be not revealed to others. In other words, even if it was common knowledge, it was something happened 22 years ago, people knew about it.
Yeah.
But he still related it.
Shouldn't do it.
Shouldn't have done that. Okay. Well, let's say it wasn't something bad, it was just a secret.
Yeah.
Don't do it.
It was a secret, it's not Lashon Hara.
But I still say, it's not always that obvious when you have a private conversation amongst three people what exactly is supposed to be kept secret in that conversation.
The assumption should always be, always keep it secret.
Yeah. That's right.
You should tell the person, can I tell this to others? That's all. It's very simple. No, say, am I allowed to say this? You told me a very interesting personal thing about your life. Can I tell this to others? No. Don't leave it to, you know, you go home, oh, you know, hi, Marilyn, you'd be surprised. You know, so-and-so told me that he used to be gay. I don't know. No, maybe he got so what? You know, he wanted to tell you. He didn't want you to tell your wife, because then you tell your wife, and your wife didn't hear that in confidence. And then your wife calls, and then within an hour, the whole city knows. And so therefore, you can't assume, you should always assume not to tell. Unless you watch it on television. Even then, the Chavetz Chaim, this is the thing of three people know. Chavetz Chaim said there's a lot of conditions on that. It's very difficult, even if three people know, to reveal the secret. Better not to tell. Okay, we now have a little bit more time. We start the next Mishnah. Next Mishnah. Rolling along. Now this goes only for about less than a blot, and then we finish the third parak. You turn the page, you'll see. Sneer, turn the page. Got very thin pages.
Yeah.
Oh no, yeah, right at the bottom, see? So hopefully by the end of the week, we'll be finished with the parak. All right, the Mishnah says, calls man shemevi raya. Here's the thing. What if a verdict is given? Judges say, guilty, you pay him the $100. He pays him the $100. Got it? 2 days later, the loser finds new evidence and wants to present it to the court, and this can overturn the case. Is it allowed to be done? Now, what about in South African law? What about in South African law?
Case closed.
What?
Court of appeal.
Well, that's, you're not talking about a criminal or civil case. The Court of Appeal, but that's not the same thing. You go on appeal, yes.
Yeah, that's what this is.
Well, appeal means we don't think the case was presented correctly or dealt with correctly.
Well, that's what this is.
The guy is bringing new evidence. Is that does that make it an appeal?
You can't go back to the same court. And you can't go back to the same
court. Go to another court, that's fine.
And say,
but I've got new evidence I didn't have before.
Another court.
Well, brand new, we just found a document.
Yeah. Of course you can.
Let's say it was an inheritance settlement, right? And there was a will. And now you found there was a later written will.
Yeah.
You just found it.
That's right. Yeah.
Of course you can. You can't go back to the same court.
Well, anyway, but here we say like this. Here we say, Kol Zman Shemevi Raya. Even after a verdict has been issued, if a litigant brings evidence, new evidence, what do we say? So ser es hadin. He can nullify the verdict. In other words, there's no statute of limitations on the submission of evidence. Even long after the verdict has been issued, if a litigant finds new evidence to support his claim, he may submit it to the court, and on the evidence strength of his evidence, compel the court to retract its verdict against the same court. This applies to the plaintiff as well as the defendant. Okay, but now we're going to have three little mini machlokasim coming up. This, everyone agrees to this point. But now, how about if the judges word the end of the judgment in the following way? Amalo, what if the court says to a litigant, after ruling against him, and they're ruling against him, and now they say the following, Kol Rayas Shieshlo, all the evidence that you may have to support your claim, we're saying you're guilty, Hava Mikanasho, you have 30 days to produce any new evidence.
Oh.
Okay? And we'll see why the judges felt compelled to say this. In other words, you normally don't ask that, but if the judges, for whatever reason, they may be a little suspicious, whatever, they said, listen, you are guilty, you have to pay him $100. If we're giving you 30 days to find new evidence. Okay, now, what happens? Matzah b'soch shloshim yom, if he does find it within 30 days, so sir, we can now nullify the verdict based on that. But la'achar shloshim yom, but after 30 days he brings it, ain't a so sir, does not retract it. Once the litigant allowed the prescribed time to pass, any evidence that he produces afterwards falls under suspicions, since if it had been authentic, he would mostly have found it within the allotted time. There we don't accept his evidence. That's the Tana Kama, to which Rav Shimon Gamliel argues on that. I'm Rav Shimon Gamliel. He says, what are you talking about? Mayasa zesh lo matzah. What do you want? The guy didn't find it within 30 days. Exactly. Like, if he's making up the evidence, he can make it up within 30 days.
Yeah, okay.
If he forges a document, he could have done it within 30 days. So why is he bringing it later? Because he didn't find it.
That's right.
You know, don't you have things missing in your house?
Yeah.
You're looking for them. You lost, let's say, your birth certificate. You misplaced it. So what do? You look for a month, too. You can't. You go to the government, you get a new birth certificate. Guess what? Then you find the other one. So what do you want?
That happens.
So that's Rav Shimon ben Gamliel. And by the way, we paskin like Rav Shimon Gamliel, that even if you bring it after 30 days, we accept it.
What was the reason for 30 days, not 15?
Well, I guess that's a usual amount of time. Okay, so what do we do with a guy who couldn't find it within 30 days, who matzalachas and finds it after 30 days? Of course, he could present the evidence afterwards. That's Rav Shimon Gamliel, and we hold like him. Next case. Amar lo havei eidim. What if they say, instead of evidence, they say, bring witnesses to support your claim? Amar, and he says, ein li eidim. I don't have any witnesses. Amar, they say, havaraya. Bring any proof, let's say a document to support your claim. Amar, ein li raya. And he says, I don't have any documents. That's what the court asks him. Well, you say you paid him, or whatever. Bring us proof. I don't have. If he says, I don't have. And then Alakrisman, and later, sometime later, Havi Raya Matsev, he brings either evidence or witnesses. Tanakama says, Hareza Eina Klum. That's nothing, because we suspect he forged it when he said he didn't have any.
He said he had none.
Shingam Lil says, Mayasa Zeshlohayu Deshashem. What do you do with a guy who thought he didn't have any witnesses? And then later, Matsev ate him, and then he found witnesses. Or Lohaya Desha Sharaya, or he thought he didn't have any documents. Once he found a document.
Yeah, right.
In this case, we paskin like the Chachamim and not like Rav Shimon Gamliel.
So we don't allow
you. We don't allow. Why? But this one makes more sense. Here he said, I don't have.
Yeah.
The other case, we gave him 30 days. But he says, I don't. Why'd you say I don't have?
Yeah, okay.
But anyway, last case, and we'll end the Mishnah on this. Rosh Mishchayev Bedin, let's say the litigant was informed, who said he has no evidence. He saw he was about to be found liable in litigation. He sees, looks like I'm going to lose. Va'amar, and now he says, Kirvu ploni ploni vidu. Let so-and-so and so-and-so approach and testify for me. In other words, first he said no, but now it's before they issue the rendering. O shehitzi raya mitachas pundoso, or he produces evidence, such as a document from under his belt. Everyone agrees, no machlokas, hareze enokum, that's nothing. Okay, the litigant obviously knew of the existence of these witnesses or this document and nevertheless stated that he has no evidence to produce. It's therefore clear that the witness evidence are not reliable and he's making a desperate effort to win the case. If he said, I don't have, and only as he sees they're about to render it, he's going to lose, then he pulls out the shtick. Even Rav Shimon Gamliel would say it's not believable, and we're going to leave it at that. Okay, perfect.